You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-hosts, Vanana.
Hi, everyone.
And Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to a very bald, very clean episode 129 of the Fanboy Garage. So happy to have you guys with us. Vanana is not bald at all, but Chris and I, a little shine. Well, for those of you that are watching us on YouTube, we've got a nice little glow going on the foreheads. Anyways, welcome back to another episode. We're very happy to have you guys once again with us. There's so much to discuss, so much to unpack. WandaVision continues to intrigue. We've got the end of Cobra Kai that finally Vanana watched. We've got a new Superman trailer. We have Kong versus Godzilla. Zack Snyder is allegedly moving back to a four-hour film. So let's dig in with WandaVision, where it all gets crazy. What'd you guys think?
So episode 3, now in color. Yes. It was cool. I mean, look, it continues being a really great tribute to all of the types of shows that I grew up watching and still watch when I need to be like in a happy place. The attention to detail in creating like the sitcom universe is pretty amazing. Like they have the look, they have the lighting down, obviously the aesthetics, the costumes, the sets, but even like the subtle shifts in the laugh track and things like that are, and the little musical cues and stuff that relate to, like, obviously the Brady Bunch was like a big inspiration for this show. That stuff kind of blows me away. Like I love all of that. And, you know, as far as like where it fits in the MCU aspects of it, I mean, we're starting to move a little bit now, right? Like, and we got our, not that we really needed it, I guess, but our confirmation right at the end of the episode that, yes, clearly this is some type of parallel universe or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there is a real world out there or another world out there, and we got to see that. So, yeah, this episode was full of all kinds of goodness. I think it built on what I started to love after the second episode. Mm-hmm. And now I'm just, like, in full-on, like, can't wait for the next episode mode. So,
yeah,
I think this episode had a nice balance of the sitcom trope that we're going with. You know, it had its like little funny, like laughy moments with the neighbors, you know, but the seams are ripping a little bit more, you know, like that veil on reality in this episode. We got so much more, and that was so exciting to kind of unpack and take in as you're watching it. You know, the neighbors kind of like talking and trying to tell Vision something that they know, and Wanda talking to Monica being like, what did you just say? Like, those were really tense moments that you're just like, oh my God, are they gonna say something? Are they gonna ruin this, you know, fabrication, this reality that's fabricated? So I think the tension was really high in this episode, and I really enjoyed that up until the very end when she, spoiler alert, kicks her out. Yeah. You know, like that little glimpse of where they were and where she ends up. It's like, ooh, like, what are they going to do in the next episode after that?
Yeah. Yeah. I am so intrigued by this show. I said last episode, we've never seen anything like this on television before. I don't think. Right. And
no,
it is, it has me on the edge of my seat because I don't know where they're going with any of this, right? And I know that there are comic books that follow bits and pieces of this, but this is a very, very different take on some of those stories. And, you know, I think I was trying to wrap my head around it, and I was thinking about Watchmen and how the thing that was irritating me the most about Watchmen was that it was like, there's a story being told, but there are questions that I have asked that need to be answered, right? Like, where's Ozymandias? Where's Dr. Manhattan? Like, what's the purpose of these people here? And I'm going through the same sort of motion with this show, but it's not bothering me as much, because I've been in familiar territory with the Watchmen, so I'm like, I'm cool with the ride. The one thing that it's so they're starting to answer some questions along the way, and they're very subtle. So my question was, after last episode, were like, are these people real, right? And or are they figments of Wanda's imagination or her new reality? My suspicion is that she's taken over a town of people of Westview, and she is forcing these people to act her show out for her, right? Because when Monica gets launched out of this reality, all of the sword like barrier is around a town called Westview,
right?
And so my inclination is that some of these people are real. Most of them don't know what's happening until Wanda starts to lose control, and then they slip out of that false reality or her reality, and then they wonder, you know, what's going on. I don't know about what Herb. I know that Agnes has a substantial role to play in this, how that comes to life and whether or not she's a person who is keeping Wanda captive in this place. I don't know. Herb's role, no idea. I don't know if he was slipping in and out of that reality as well as like as Wanda's getting bigger, as Wanda's losing control or subconsciously using her powers for growing the children, going into labor, it's starting to break, as you said, the seams are starting to split. So those seams start to split when she starts to lose control.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I noticed, and I rewatched all the episodes last night because Jess was like, oh, I guess I should watch WandaVision. Yeah, I was like, yeah, we should watch that. Is that everybody that snaps the reality that has nothing to do with her, like Dottie in the second episode and Mr. Hart in the first episode, they have harm caused to them. Like Wanda does harm to them, right? So she choked like unknowingly, but obviously if he's in this world and she's controlling it, she caused him to choke on that grape or whatever it was, strawberry. Dottie breaks the glass and cuts her hand. But for Vision, whenever Vision questions his reality, she reverses time, and snaps him out of it. And so I went back because Jess was like, oh, like catch me up on like this relationship thing. And so I went back and he says to her in Infinity War, you can never hurt me. Right. Like while she's trying to destroy the Mind Stone.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some of that stuff that's being pulled in. And I'm literally like, it's a feast for me when I'm watching this show because there's so many little nuggets and little. And all of the tropes and stuff that kind of call back to the shows that you know, we've all watched before watching Nick at Night or whatever. That's always fun to kind of rewatch and re-experience through this new format of a show. But then there's all of those Marvel type nuggets that are in there. You know, the callback to Ultron and Pietro and
yeah, which is a major. That's a major point in this too, right? Because that's the moment where like you could see. You know, clearly Wanda, you know, knows, right, is aware of the situation. But when she hears, oh, he was murdered by Ultron, right? Like things get dark. Like you could just see there's a darkness that overcomes.
Like her whole
demeanor. Yeah. And ultimately Geraldine's character gets banished from the world, whatever it is. And that's, you know, a direct reference obviously to the MCU, and we expect we're gonna start to see more and more of that type of stuff as the thing goes on. I mean, thinking back to what you were saying earlier about how they use the different comic storylines, and like they're just taking like bits and pieces of different iconic storylines and weaving it into their own little tale. I mean, that's something that's very MCU, right? It's something that they've done. I don't want to say, you know, they've done it often, right? They did it with the Winter Soldier. I mean, that was not a true telling of the Winter Soldier comic book and storyline. They did it with in Iron Man 3 with Extremis, right? It was not a true telling of that whole, I mean, true to the comic version, it was their version of that storyline. So they have, we've seen them, even Civil War. I mean, Civil War was, they took a concept and then fit it to what they needed it to be, right, for their movie. So we've seen that happen before. And I know that's something that, when it came to the movies, would drive a lot of, like, hardcore comic book fans crazy. Like, oh, they called it, you know, Civil War, and it's not exactly Civil War, or, oh, it's the Winters. But it's interesting that with this show, it seems like the hardcore comic fans are eating this up.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is because they haven't named it. It's not a movie that's named after an iconic comic book storyline. So you're not right away, like in your mind, you're not expecting it to be a telling of that. And they use these aspects of the comics and of these storylines as a way that where it becomes like Easter eggs and fan service and things that they can actually sink their teeth into, and where they can say, rather than sitting in a movie called Civil War and you're sitting there saying, well, that's not it. That's not it. Here you're sitting there saying, oh, well, that's part of, it's like the reverse, right? And you're trying to figure out, well, where did they derive that from? And where did they, so I think that's become part of the fun, along with all the sitcom stuff, which almost serves in some ways as a distraction, right? Because there's like so many things to like feast your eyes on and to like dig into and look at, that it's like you don't have to necessarily be 100% focused on like every little detail of the story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, the funny thing is that it's actually funny. Like in the parts where they do stuff, like I find myself like audibly laughing.
I was just going to say the stork.
That hilarious.
Like, how hilarious was that? It was just farcical. And at first I was like, what is that bird doing there? And then I was like, oh, it's a stork because she's about to deliver the baby. You know, like it was just those little things that make it kind of quirky.
I mean, there's, you know, him running over to get to the doctor, and the doc, and you know, the saying like, oh, let's go to the kitchen. He's like, as long as it actually involves walking, like that's like funny stuff. But then it gets dark because when Vision is letting him go, he goes, you know, hopefully you can make it to your trip to Bermuda. And he's like, small towns are often hard to escape.
Right.
And it's like, oh man, there's a, and he, you know, he kind of gives him this look like, why would you say that? And then, of course, the conversation between Agnes and Herb as before he, you know, after he cut through the fence, which was like he's glitching. And, you know, and the funny thing is, like, I got nuts. Like, I put on the closed captioning. I was like, I want to know exactly what those two were saying because I couldn't catch some of it. And it was, they were asking about Geraldine. Is she still in there with her? Like, does she know what's going on? You know what I mean? Like, so they... That's the part that I'm like, oh my God, do these two know what's actually happening? Like, I think Agnes knows what's happening to a degree.
Yeah, or like at least she suspects that something is wrong because the thing that she says is she has no home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
But
so, see, like, where is she coming from?
Here's the funny thing, though. If, like, on the rewatch, Geraldine comes into Wanda and Vision's house and says, hey, do you need a bucket? Water was literally coming down from my ceiling, every pipe burst, and I need to get a bucket to bail myself out. In what home?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
That was her cover.
Yeah. So it's like, but then on the flip side, how did she know? So right. She must have been monitoring their show. Like,
and,
or
the, and then like from entered.
Right. The other thing too is they say that there's speculation that the helicopter that Wanda picks up out of the bush is the helicopter that dropped off Geraldine or Monica. Because you'll hear it. It's it, in Wanda's ears and to the viewer, it sounds like a lawnmower.
Well,
and
that
a crash.
That makes sense because Agnes and Wanda were talking. Right after the helicopter crashes, and then they were talking about going over to Dottie's and like impressing her and doing that whole thing, and then Geraldine shows up at that meeting and tries to talk to her, so maybe she was listening.
And then the thing is, so Geraldine kind of doesn't know what she's doing. Like, I don't, that's a weird part about Geraldine is that I don't know if she knew that once she's in the world, she knows that she's in the world, or if she becomes part of the role. So like,
oh, interesting.
She asks her, like, Wanda asks her, oh, like, I forgot what the question was, but she was like, I don't actually know what I'm doing here. And then she's like, oh, and then she asks her, oh, so what's your name? And she's like, Geraldine. You know, there's like a little hesitation there. So there's a, I mean.
But she confidently says to her, like, oh, you know, your brother, he was killed by Ultron, in a way that makes you think that, like, that didn't just come to her. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I
No,
think
she
that,
knows.
yeah, I mean, I think she's been aware for the most part this whole time.
But
She just has
watch
to.
her, watch, rewatch it, because I thought that too, but there's a moment where it seems like she's being snapped out of something.
Well, that's possible because I think,
As yeah,
yeah.
as Wanda is kind of going through the, like, oh, I was a twin. I feel like as she pulls herself, as Wanda pulls herself, her mind out of this reality and into the things that have happened before,
Yeah.
people start to break off.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I don't know if Geraldine snaps out of it a little bit and was like, oh, he was, because then at the same point, was her attempt to try to pull Wanda back to reality? Like,
No,
no, I
I
don't
think
think
she
so.
I
Or did
think
it just
she made a
slip
mis
out of her mouth?
I think she made a mistake because when she realizes that Wanda kind of like starts questioning her and what she's doing there, right? If she's supposed to be undercover trying to pretend, you know, to live in this world, you can't blow your cover. It's just like a undercover agent, you know, all of a sudden they know who you are. You kind of have to cover that up. The look on her face was like, "Oh, snap.
Oh
Like
shit, I just said that.
I did not mean to say that." And she looked really scared of Wanda. She wasn't like, "Well, I'm just gonna tell you how it is." No, she was like,
No, she's like,
what?
oh, you
No,
want me to tell you
yeah.
how great you are? Well, again,
Yeah,
And I'm
yeah.
gonna replay that stuff
Well,
again, and
yeah,
then.
and the thing is, we also don't know what the end game is, no pun intended here,
No.
of this thing too, right? So we know that people are monitoring this and they are watching it, right? So that is a thing. And so why, right? Like, we're not really
Money.
sure what any of this is. So was the goal, is the goal to get her out of this? You know, is the goal to just try to figure out what it is? Is the goal to see how they can use this to open doors to other things? Like, we don't know what the goal here is, and what Sword's intentions are, or anybody's intentions are with this whole situation, and how it's ultimately going to, for our purposes as viewers, lead us into this next phase, right, of the MCU. So I think
Yeah,
that's part of it too.
we really don't know who has the upper hand here.
Right. And we don't know who the good guy or the bad guy is too, right?
Like Wanda could have slipped off into the off the deep end, like in grief. We don't know, right? We don't know if maybe, because in the comics, so Agnes, Agatha, I forgot her freaking last name again, the witch d helps Wanda train and hone her powers. So that may have been a thing that was happening at Westview. Somehow Wanda loses control and locks everybody into this reality. We don't know, because it just, again, it picked up. See, that's and this is the thing, this is what, going back to my reference to the Watchmen, like, there's a lot of missing pieces here, a lot of question marks. But as we're going along the journey, they're giving us some sizable breadcrumbs to kind of snack on and help to figure it out. But like, I think the payoff will be there, because of the confidence that Marvel had in the show to move it, to go like, this is the thing that we're leading off with for the MCU.
Well, what an exciting start, because they are planting so many seeds. You know, this is the kick of the kickstart of phase four, right? We also have, you know, her and Vision's twins, which people are suspecting might make appearance later in like a Young Avengers like team up.
I am investing in it, because I bought the first event, the first Young Avengers comic book appearance with the kids and all that stuff. So I'm, hey, please use them, because you're just gonna make the value of my comic book go through the roof.
Yeah, and like if you
Thank you,
think
Wanda.
about it, you know, and like when we started watching like all these MCU films, like starting with like the first Iron Man, or you know, you got tidbits of stuff, but you didn't know how to put it together until right until the very end, where you're like, oh, and so many people are sleuths and like investigators and writing articles about it. So it's, to me, it's kind of exciting to be in this moment right now, even though we don't know what's going on, but we are witnessing something really special because it's going to set the tone for the whole slate of movies that, well, if they come out, right? Whenever they come out, it's setting the tone right now.
Oh, and it's not just the movies, but it's these other shows too,
and the
right?
other shows, right?
Because you have things like She-Hulk, right? You have things like Moon Knight, stuff like that that are coming out, Ironheart, that are not thus far tied to the, I mean, this is all the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I get it, but like they're not tied to any big screen property right now. Right. So
which is so great, because I want to see new heroes. I want to see new storylines. I want to see people that maybe I've heard of and mentioned, but have never really followed or know that much about.
You know, so I mean, they're setting it up for sure. I mean, the new Hawkeye series is going to set up.
Right.
Kate Cassidy. Is that something like that?
Kate Bishop.
Kate Bishop.
Kate Bishop. And now we've got the twins, and then there's Miss Marvel, which they showed a trailer for as well. So Kamala Khan, it's going to be.
And is that going to be a Disney Plus thing? Probably. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like you could, cause they're going to have to set this up too. I mean, now they're working in. So let's pretend we existed in a universe where the Netflix Marvel series were going to be as tied to the MCU as they were originally supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
And started out for about a minute and a half as being, in that same universe. Is this going to be a bigger scale version of that? Like, are we going to get a Disney Plus universe within the MCU that features these characters that we get to know on Disney Plus? Are they going to start to maybe build to something bigger that's going to be a Disney Plus thing that, sure, will tie in with the movies, and I think at some point, but like, will we get something like that?
I mean, I think the finale of WandaVision will probably help answer that question. I would say without a doubt Loki is in some capacity, because from what I understand in some of the trailers, and like, you know, I watch these YouTubers that are like breaking shit down shot for shot, which I love that shit, like shot for shot. Some dude, like this guy named the Canadian Lad, is watching it like 0.25 XP, like so slow, and I'm loving it because he's like, oh, did you see this? And I'm like, no, I did not see that, dude, because you're watching it like, you know what I mean? So he's saying that there's a female Loki in the Loki trailer.
Oh, like, what? Interesting.
And so he breaks down all these shots and then goes back to like, you know, behind the scenes footage of this particular actress. And I'm like, that's dope. But then if there's a female Loki, that means that there's multiple versions of Loki, right? So you've got the multiverse opening its door. So Loki will be another one of those.
Yeah, unless it's tied into the concept that like the Loki show I've heard compared to like Quantum Leap, like a dark evil Quantum Leap. So maybe it's him in somebody. You know what I mean? Like you never know where that show could be going.
Yeah,
but
that's it's crazy. And then there's like a shot of he's like in a church. Or something like that, and they have like this red character that's on stained glass window, and people are saying that that's Mephisto,
right?
He's a major villain,
yeah.
And they're saying Mephisto is the villain of WandaVision,
right?
So I'm like, this is dope. This is great, because then you got Ghost Rider, you got all these other characters that tied in Mephisto. And I love this shit. Like, just get me a big fork, you know, those big. Yeah. The big wooden fork and spoon that your grandparents used to hang on the wall. Yeah, give those to me.
I'm or in an Italian house you got hit with when you were bad. Yeah, the wooden spoon.
Just got hit with like chancletas and belts.
Yeah, there you go.
So hangers for me.
The thing is, you know, that too. Thinking about what Tavo had, we were talking to Tavo about a few weeks ago, like having this, like these streaming services, right? Gives you the freedom to really start to explore and expand and get ultra geeky, like with these types of things, right? Like you can open up because now you're not trying to figure out like, oh, there's too many characters. Oh, I don't want to cram too many characters. Like, yeah, where we don't have room for all of this because we're going to have like 3 or 4 movies a year or 3 movies a year. And that's it. Now you have like, I mean, you could do 2-3 shows a month if you wanted to.
Right.
And then still have your movies. And I mean, the budgets, like I saw something like the budget for Falcon and Winter Soldier was like, you know, move like a cinematic budget. It was like, yeah. I don't know if it was $200 million or if it was like $150 million or $250. It was some insane number that was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I believe it. It looks
like it.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. You need more content. You got to pack more stuff in all of these episodes, you know, unlike a movie where you kind of have this formula and you always have to do a lot of cuts, right?
Mm.
Like in movies, they film a lot of scenes. And sometimes they always say, oh, I didn't make it in the editing room or I ended up on the cutting room floor, you know. But now with these shows, you have like 9 or 10 episodes. They need to fill those in. Mm. It's almost harder.
More or less, though, but then if you think about it, like a movie these days is going for like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Two hours, 15 minutes, give or take. And like these shows are only 30 minutes, 28 minutes. You know what I'm saying? Like they're so short. Like WandaVision, we were able to go through the first 3 episodes in like 1.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Not even. And like still have time to watch another show. Like you can binge watch the first 3 episodes. And that's what I'm saying. I'm like, they're doing it so short, but there's so much meat in that. In those.
Right.
Like, but maybe it isn't. I don't know.
Okay. That's the other thing that these new upcoming shows are breaking. They're breaking this concept that like dramas are 1 hour long and comedies are always like 30 minutes.
Yep.
Now, WandaVision, you know, not exactly a drama, not exactly a comedy, right? It kind of lands like in between, but maybe more so comedy because we're talking about sitcoms, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm used to the 30 minute format, right? But then something like The Mandalorian, like that's 30 minutes. That's 30 minutes too. Yeah. And you're used to like, okay, dramatic show, 1 hour, you know, The Crown and all of these shows on Netflix. But I think Disney Plus is taking it to this in a different space. They're really not adhering by that rule. It doesn't need to have a big implication, but that's also kind of interesting to note. So that when you do have 9 episodes that are just 30 minutes long, it's definitely like easier to do than 9 episodes of hour long episodes.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it feels like they're like teaser trailers in a way. Like, yeah. They're just whetting your appetite because like I come off of that show and I'm like, I need another one. Oh my God.
And you know, The Mandalorian takes it to a whole nother extreme because like they're fitting. They don't have a set time for anything. Like there's 40 minute episodes. There's 25 minute episodes, there's 35 minute. It's like whatever they need to tell their story.
Different director each episode.
Yeah, and that's a whole different, that's a great way of storytelling. You're right. I mean, this is something that we talked about, I don't even know, in the early days of this podcast, right? How the differences between like British television and like American television.
Yep.
And how one of the things I loved about British television was the fact that and not so much episode length, but season length. Like they just did as many episodes as they needed to do to tell their story. If it was 3, it was 3. If it was 6, it was 6. If it was 20, it was 20. And so like they call them series over there. We call them seasons here. But so their seasons would be like, you know, like the original Office. There's like 11 episodes or 12 episodes of that show.
Mm.
You know, like the Ricky Gervais version. I mean, right. Show like that I love, The IT Crowd. You know, you're talking about like 6 episode seasons, you know, and not a lot of them. And then they just end them. If it ends after 2 seasons because they finished telling their story, they did. Like they're not obligated to like – they don't feel obligated to do the traditional like, okay, 13 episodes, 23 episodes, you know, 30 minutes, and it's going to go until basically nobody wants to watch the show anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're starting to see, because of streaming, I think, more so, and more creative freedom, you're starting to see a shift here with these shows where it's like, we're going to do what we need to do to tell our story. If it's 9 episodes, 10 episodes, 8 episodes, 20 episodes, half hour, hour, whatever, like, we're going to give you whatever we need. And that's why when you were saying, Aaron, about how, like, feels like there's so much meat to these episodes, because there is, because you're not getting that extra 20 minutes of filler every week, or you're not getting that extra, like, five episodes of filler where they take an episode off just to, you know, because they needed to, because they only had so much story to tell.
I like that. I like that so much better. We're also seeing some shows with, you know, like a limited series format. Mm-hmm. Like, I think like a Queen's Gambit, even though I didn't see it yet, I think that was the format for Queen's Gambit. So that's, yeah, like, I agree. That's kind of cool.
And Watchmen, right?
Watchmen.
Yeah. One season. Yeah. They told their story and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. I just watched The Undoing on HBO.
What's that?
Nicole Kidman, Hugh Grant, Donald Sutherland. It's on HBO Max.
New?
It was November, December-ish.
Okay.
I won't spoil anything for you. You should check it out.
That's new.
It's an interesting drama. It's a limited series.
Ah, The Undoing.
Yeah. Yeah, check that out. But yeah, I mean, look, for I dig the shortness of WandaVision. It reminds me, again, going back to playing all those nostalgic vibes of like the short show, and it kind of has its little arc. Mm-hmm. What they're, you know, it's the delivery, it's the, you know, it's the talent show, it's the dinner,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, all of those little tropes. I love it all, and I love how short it is, because then at the end of it, they're like, boop, nope, it's still an MCU show, and you're like,
ah! I'm like, I hate you because you like left me hanging now, and now I can't wait for the next episode. I can't wait for Fridays, you know?
And it is, you know, the thing is too, it's actually a delight to binge it as well. But because it's so short, again, you go through it very fast and you're still left at the end of, like, you know, that 3 week binge it's a 2 week binge with Jess. And she's like, wait, what's going on now? I'm like, well, now you got to watch it week to week with me.
Yeah. We watched the first two episodes, before I watched episode three. And I actually wound up enjoying episode one more on the second viewing than I did after the first viewing. And I think a big reason for that was I had come to grips with what it was, right? So since that episode is very sitcom based, like, you really don't get a lot of, I mean, there's some things, but that one, it's still very much like they're not letting you in too much on what's happening. I just got to enjoy it a little bit more, like, knowing what it was going to be, taking in like all of the fun of it. And I mean, look, Paul Bettany should be in a sitcom. Like, he's awesome. Got perfect comic timing. Like, he needs, I will be very disappointed, and I know it's not going to happen, but probably, but I would love to see this guy in like a half hour weekly, like, sitcom.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He's hilarious.
Yeah.
He's so good. Like that. He grabs the papaya and he's like, oh, I can't wait to be a papaya.
Yeah.
That joke.
And he's got the delivery. He's got the physicality. Like, he could even be like a physical comedian if he needed to. His facial expressions.
Episode two, like, he kills it. Yeah. He kills it. You know what I mean? Like, when he starts flying and then she like attaches the rope to him and he like swings forward, I'm laughing my ass off. I thought he was great. Yeah, you know,
the thing
and then
with
he's
the
like,
gum,
I literally,
the gum was great.
I blurted out laughing because he's like, flourish. And she's, you're not supposed to say it out loud. He's like,
oh. Yeah.
It's great. It's great stuff. It's good stuff.
Well,
you know,
we all are in love.
I think. For some folks who were expecting a traditional MCU type content, like a movie or show or whatever, I'm glad that it's not that, because it's a palate cleanser in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. You know what I mean? Like, the balls of Marvel to be like, we're going to do this show like a show.
Right.
Like a legit sitcom, and we're gonna have all of the bells and whistles that get people really excited. And I love that.
Yeah.
The audacity of it.
I think, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier is going to be fairly straight MCU stuff, I think, anyway.
It's
going to
be like a buddy cop show.
But probably not to the extent that not. This is a sitcom, though. It's not going to be like, But, and I think that, you know, some of these other shows going forward will be, Loki, I think, has potential to be a little fun, but still, I think they're going to be more, nothing's going to be like this, because this is a unique thing that they're doing. So.
Yeah. This is, I mean, this is great.
It's a great time to be a MCU fan, you know, like when someone just hits you with WandaVision, what they're doing and how much confidence they have behind it. Because like, I just think about what they were doing in the pitch room or what they were thinking about when they were writing this. It can rub a lot of people off the wrong way or they don't understand it, but they were just like, no, this is our vision. No pun intended. And we are going to hit you with it. And as an audience member, you just have to just go for the ride because it's just so exciting. Yeah. Right? Like you just trust them. Like I trust them that I'm going to be entertained every week. I have no qualms about it. I know the finale is going to hit me with something big. I'm just strapped in. Like I'm not worried about this ride at all. You know, like I'm not scared. I'm just like, all right, cool. I'm just going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And that's it. And sometimes, you know, with other shows or other movies or whatnot, sometimes you're skeptical. You're like, I don't know. How is this going to be, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for me, when we get right into it, I'm like, well, I guess this is what it is. You know, I'm going to go along for the ride and see, you know, see how it goes. But like for the most part, I'm like, I'm enjoying kind of the throwback vibes of what they were doing, you know? And It's interesting, you know, to see it with a character like Vision, whose face is purple and, you know,
like Bewitched. It's just weird. Like I was just going to say, it's like taking a psychedelic, even though I've never done it, but I've heard you need to show up ready to go for the ride and just let it take you. Yeah. And I feel like WandaVision, as weird and quirky as it is, everything is just so weird about the show and all the different mishmash of elements that we're used to. Like, they really bring the audience into it, you know, tugging at our heartstrings with all the sitcom tropes.
And I'll just clue you guys in on something that folks out there are speculating on, right? So the commercials that are dropped in these episodes. So they are in some ways like they are all revolving around time. And if you remember anything from Infinity War, the one thing that Vision says to Wanda is, I wish we had more time. Right. Mm. So there's overtones of, you know, having unlimited time, creating your own reality. The same two actors are playing typically the wife and husband thing. There's speculation that those are Wanda's parents.
Right. I've seen that.
Right. Yeah. Which is awesome because and then the other thing too, is I heard somebody did a comparison of the toaster oven, like the sound that the toaster oven makes
was like the same, bomb
is the same sound that the bomb, the Stark bomb, like, so when in Iron Man, when he sees the Stark bomb hit right next to him, it makes the same exact noise. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh my God.
And it's like beeping red.
Yeah.
The toaster oven. Yeah.
Like a bomb. Yeah. Yeah. So there's all types of stuff. And then the Strucker, the Baron von Strucker, callback. He's the person that created the twins. You know, the direct callback to Hydra. You know, there's all of those things swirling. So I'm just like,
The time thing just gave me goosebumps. Mm. And that just gave me goosebumps when he says that, because that's all you wish for, you know, when you lose someone.
Sure. And there was a way that they could have done this show that could have just been dark and could have been just weird and almost sort of sad and depressing. And who knows, maybe we get there, but by doing it this way, it's so disarming and it's so, it's so inviting, even though you realize when you think about what's happening here, it's sad and tragic, but you don't feel that because of you're watching this sitcom that makes you feel good, and the, you know, the and the music and the jokes and the laugh track and all of those things are a way to just distract you from the fact that this is a tragic story, whether she's being manipulated or she's doing the manipulating or both, whatever the case may be, is this is about her not wanting to let go of her love who is gone. Right. And just trying to give herself this perfect life. That's a sad story, but it's not the way they're telling it. And that's kind of a brilliant thing.
I think she's going to have to leave him there towards the end of the season. You know,
comics say otherwise.
And if you think about it in that lens, you know, you think of Captain America, you know, who went back and just lived a whole life with her, right? And you think of what Wanda's doing, living all of these different decades. It's like she chose all of these different lifetimes to experience with him. That if they're setting this up to at the end where she has to leave,
she's going to somehow get pushed into her reality because she has nothing to go off of.
Yeah, right. And even if, like you said, rumors say otherwise, it could be a temporary thing.
Yeah.
But it could very well have her make that big choice or force her to make that big choice.
Yeah, so, I mean, if we were to really, really speculate on anything that's happening, so we have to look at some of the trailers where, like, Vision says to Wanda, this is our world, we should fight for it. Mm-hmm. I went to full on action mode and he kind of zooms up. But then there's also scenes where it looks like people are asleep and they're all like everyone's glitching out or everyone's kind of stuck. And then Vision touches, I think it's Agnes, he touches her and she's like, you're dead. You know what I mean? Like, so who knows? Like if he ends up stepping, because we now know that people can be extricated from this reality, whether they are real people or now part of this world that she's created, because we know Vision is dead, but what if Vision escapes from this world? Is Vision back? Did she recreate the Mind Stone? We don't know any of these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have suspicion that she may have recreated the Mind Stone because there's a trailer shot where we see it coming back together. So who knows? But like I said, I'm on that saddle. I'm riding off with this. I'm along for the ride. So let's do it.
I hope she leaves Paul Bettany in a world where he gets to be in a sitcom every week and I get to watch
just replaying
just being it selfish. Yeah, that's okay. And whatever, pick an era, whatever you want to pick, 70s, 50s. What was 60s.
Do you remember that show? No, it was not a show. I'm sorry. It was a movie with John Ritter.
Yeah. Oh, that was...
I watched it recently.
The one where he goes through like the TV.
The TV, yeah. I'm like thinking about that. Like, Paul Bettany jumping through all of these, like, you know, these TV shows.
That's
and then
it.
John Ritter actually falls on the couch of Three's Company, and they're like, "Where have you been?" And he's like, "Ah,
yeah."
I forgot the name of that movie. Yeah. I just watched it recently.
But,
anyways,
Anyway, so. I guess the other news, so sticking with TV, since obviously that's the thing right now, they released the trailer for Superman and Lois, which for the CW. And I mean, it doesn't, at least based on this trailer,
look
it doesn't
look like a CW show.
No, it sure doesn't. And this looks like a big, epic story. And it looks cinematic and it looks really cool. And I'm pretty excited about it.
They put a Zack Snyder wash on that. On
they
that
did.
Trailer. That color, the muted color palette.
Yeah.
Mm.
It has that Man of Steel. I mean,
it does have a Man of Steel
and
feel.
Friend, yeah, Ron Diesel called that out, and I remember watching it, going like, he's 100% right, 100% right.
Mm-hmm.
It has that, and it has those undertones.
Yeah.
You know. But I like Man of Steel. Yeah. I love Man of Steel. I'm cool with it. Let's do it.
Right. And it's this is still a, they're at a point here where it's a developing story, right? So again, there can be progression. You know, we don't know where it's headed. I mean, you know, not that this is related to Smallville at all, but like Smallville started out as a show where it wasn't going to even be, it was going to be a show that was a Superman show without Superman, right? Like it wasn't going to be about powers or anything. It was going to be like a coming of age story about a kid, a guy in a small town. And while we would all know that this is the guy that becomes Superman, that was never really in their plans. And then somewhere along the way, it became like a full-on superhero show. Yeah. And then he eventually did become, the Superman that we know and wore the, that whole thing. Yeah. And just like Gotham, too. Gotham, again, not related to this, but Gotham was supposed to be like set in the Batman universe. It was not supposed to be a Batman show at all. It was supposed to be a, you know, a cop drama detective show, whatever. And then it became like an origin for every Batman villain ever. And then eventually an origin for Batman. Right. And that, so like things change over time.
Yeah, it's called ratings.
Well, yeah, obviously. So, you know, it'd be interesting. I mean, look, it's been a while since we've had Superman in Supergirl and stuff like that in these shows, but it's been a while since we've had a Superman television show. Lois and Clark was it's an underrated show in a lot of ways. Isn't going to be that, but and we had Smallville, obviously, which again, but that wasn't, we didn't get Superman week to week or
there was also Krypton, wasn't there?
Krypton, but that's a Krypton
that
was
like
set
a, like the grandfather of
Superman.
What channel was that?
That
on?
Was on
Sci-Fi.
Yeah,
I remember watching a few.
Had a very had a strong first season.
Yeah, and then it got treated like a lot of Sci-Fi channel network shows do, and that was that. But
so like, let me wrap my brains about this. He has children in this show, right? Like Clark has two kids. Is that right?
I believe there
those
are
those two guys. Kids. I mean, those two boys.
Yeah, aren't they like his kids?
I don't know.
Cause like he's like they're like you're Superman, like no way, and like picks up a truck.
Yeah.
And they're like, holy shit, you are Superman.
Maybe they're like neighbors' kids.
I have no
idea. It wasn't clear.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out, but I know that. So like at some point. In Arrowverse, Lois is pregnant, and then I think these are his kids.
Oh, I don't think
these are his kids, or at least one of them might.
Yeah, they're definitely parents, which is it's a fun story.
Is it a fun story?
No, I don't mean the fact that
you're
the,
like
the
it's parent. A fun.
No,
story.
I mean that this the idea of Superman and Lois ever. In the comics have had some fun storylines, being dealing with their son and trying to raise him and things like that.
Yeah.
It's added like a different dimension.
His name is Jonathan.
Jonathan, yeah, which is after the father, but yeah, is after his grandfather, or his Earth grandfather, I guess technically.
Oh, that's it. Banana's out. She's like,
I'm not into it. No, I'm not into it.
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting take. You know,
there
you,
are
you
two sons.
Dad
by
as
the
a,
way.
Huh?
There are two sons. Yeah, Jordan and Jonathan.
So, like, imagine your father's like the greatest superhero that ever lived, and you're like, God, Dad, you're so not cool. Why can't you just be like Superman? And you're like,
I'll show you.
Give you the epic Super Smackdown. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a way to ground the character. I mean, in a sense, because without that element of it, this then becomes another like villain of the week Superman show. And I don't know that anybody needs that. You know, we've had enough of that. And it's also a story that you're not going to see probably, in a movie, So like we mentioned how WandaVision, which again is a very different thing, but how WandaVision is something we probably wouldn't have seen in a movie. Like, this is something that you're probably not going to see in a movie, the big epic story of Superman and Lois raising their children, and dealing with them having to balance work, superhero and family. That's not something
he's
that's
got
gonna...
a girlfriend. He stayed out late. Yeah. Like, let me go fly over there and go X-ray her house.
And it's also a way to minimize that's always been one of the issues with these Superman shows. Like, especially with Smallville and with Lois and Clark, was that you have to kind of minimize Superman because there's only so much room in a budget, especially on a television budget, to have all of that big action. Like, so you have to build a show that's interesting around the fact that, yes, he's Superman, but he can't be Superman every second of the episode. Right. So you may have to have some episodes where he's barely Superman. He's just Clark Kent raising his so that's going to be the balance.
Trying to raise a family.
Yeah.
Mm. You know.
Yeah.
As long as none of those kids push pianos, I'm cool.
Yeah.
I hate Superman Returns.
Yes, we know. We know.
I'll pass on that one.
Quest for Peace is way better than Superman Returns. I said it.
So, one thing I know Aaron does love is Bond. And he's going to have to wait even longer for
But you know what? If it comes around my birthday, I'm cool with it.
It's, October 8th now?
Is not my birthday, but close enough.
Yeah, so I think that was the date. They moved it to October. So it was supposed to come out now April whatever, 2nd or April something. Yeah, now it's, no, it's not. Now they moved it to October. I think it said October 8th, the thing that I read.
So we talked a little bit about this last week.
Yeah.
And
they officially.
Sounds like how and where we heard that and then bubbled that out there, because like no one was talking about it. That's cool.
It was like foresight. It was like ESP.
Yeah. So move to the fall, which I imagine that there will be other films doing the same thing. As we mentioned last week, April and the spring.
Yeah.
Time period is going to be
well crazy. I mean, here we are, we're a week away from February, right, as we record this, and jeez. I mean, it's not like, you know, a month or two from now it looks like things are going to be dramatically different. So I mean, the question I have is, and this isn't even necessarily Bond related, but it is related to this situation, is that, you know, let's say that Disney isn't confident
Black Widow
in being able to release Black Widow in May.
Drop that shit like it's hot on.
Do they just say the hell with it? Do they decide to push it again, or do they say no, we're going to do Premiere Access like they did for Mulan? Or
I feel like Black Widow might be setting something up.
Yeah,
and that's why they're not going to drop it on Disney Plus. But at this point, they're running into the same issue that Warner Brothers ran into with Wonder Woman, which is it loses relevance the longer it's not in theaters or accessible to the public.
Especially with these other properties like Wanda. Everyone's talking WandaVision, and they'll be talking Falcon and Winter Soldier and all that
stuff.
Right,
so it's like, it's Wonder not
Woman
stopping
did
anyone.
Not do that.
But what I'm seeing is that it's not, you know, it's not stopping people from talking about the properties. It's not, it's getting people really excited. They have access to it. Like, let's just play it for what it is. People are not going to the theaters. They're not going to go to the theaters for quite some time, okay? They should just drop it Premier Access. They're going to make money.
Right.
They're going to make a lot more money than I think Wonder Woman 84 would be making.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is time, right? So, I mean, right now Black Widow's scheduled to come out May 7th. Yeah. But then you have Shang-Chi on July 9th. You have Eternals on November 5th. And you have assuming the new Spider-Man movie still coming out in December, you have that in December. So, like, where would they move it? And if it has to come out before those movies for continuity purposes, like, you're going to start to get, you know, because May, what are you going to do? Where are you going to move it to? You're going to have it two movies come out in July? No.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, and then you don't want to start shifting your entire slate again.
Right.
Again. Because that becomes problematic. So you're right. I think, I mean, they still have time, but I mean, at some point they're going to have to make a decision, right? Like, for marketing purposes.
100%. And the other thing too, and the toys are like already gone, like out and gone, you know, because that thing was November of last year.
Yeah.
Even before, no, May of last year. What am I talking about?
Right. It was originally May of last year.
Yeah, the original release date of Black Widow was May of last year.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, Bond's original release date was April 10th of last year.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But like, here's the thing. So I say, if I were Disney, I'm not, I'd move Black Widow to Premier Access. If anything changes, Shang-Chi, Eternals are already in the can, right? Those things are done. They're in post. If anything changes, move one of those dates up, and you could still capture, given your movies enough time to breathe between each other, right? If the environment changes, which I don't really think it will. So they can just leave them as is, because or kind of play with the way that Warner Brothers is doing, like, you know, drop something on Premier Access for like a short period of time and then keep it in theaters at the same time. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
figure that strategy out. But Black Widow at this point, just release it.
Yeah.
On Premier Access. Because I forgot how long we waited for Mulan to hit Disney Plus for free. Was it like...
It was December. It came out, yeah,
right?
December.
Was it 2 months or longer than that? I feel like
it was 2 months.
Okay. I feel around, like it was longer than that.
Was it three?
I almost feel like Mulan dropped like in August, and then it was like December.
It was the first week of December for sure that it went free, or whatever you call that.
But when did it
hit? So here we go. So it was Premier Access.
It was like September.
It was September 4th. And then
so 3 months.
Yeah, and then December 4th is when it became available to everybody.
I mean, and I'm telling you, I think Black Widow will kill on Disney Plus. You want to talk about a moment that will galvanize, like, people, like, anyone who was on the fence about Disney Plus will jump and go and just to catch Black Widow.
Yeah, especially if that's, like, the only place that they can see it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson has already, it's not even like you have a new actress, you know, playing Black Widow. It's like you have Scarlett who originated the role. And she's finishing it, you know, and, you know, you have everything that happened in Infinity War and Endgame. Like, we want more of her, and we want more of her, even if it is in her past, you know. Yeah. So that's just going to bring people.
Well, and here's the thing, too, from a budget perspective. Now, the budget for this movie is anywhere between 150 and 200 million, right? So,
right.
Which is what I read the budget for Falcon and Winter Soldier was. So clearly Disney and Marvel Studios does not have a problem using Disney Plus to release things that cost hundreds of millions of dollars, because there's obviously return on that investment. So if you're going to make Falcon and Winter Soldier for Disney Plus, spending that same amount of money, it makes sense to me that you would have no problem if you wanted to put Black Widow on Premier Access, where you're going to charge extra money on top of the subscription and still have some theatrical release, you know, window there for people who want to go or can go, and for overseas and all of that stuff. Like, but, and you know, who knows? We don't know what things are going to be like in May, but it's not like you can make the decision on May 1st. You have to start making this decision like February, March. You're going to have an idea of what you're going to do with this.
Yeah.
I think it's going to come soon. That decision needs to be made.
It has to be. Yeah.
Sooner than later.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's a couple of other timing things that I think will lend itself nicely. Like, what's the actor that plays Hoop on Stranger Things? That's in Black Widow. What's that guy's name?
David
Harbour. So he, like, Stranger Things is about to be released again.
Mm-hmm.
So you're gonna be riding high off of that. I just think the timing is right. Just drop it.
Yeah.
Do it on Disney Plus.
Just like HBO Max is doing with, well, not just like, because they're not charging extra, but they are going to be releasing Godzilla versus Kong in March on HBO Max. Just had its first trailer after that little tease that we got. And so, I mean, I'm a lifelong Godzilla fan. I'm a lifelong King Kong fan. I grew up watching those movies. I grew up, the best part of Thanksgiving for me was the Godzilla, King Kong movies, marathons, whatever, that we would get here in New York on Channel 9. Like,
aww.
That was the ultimate.
UPN 9?
It was just WWOR, like,
not
the
even
local.
UPN.
No, there was no, it was just a local thing back then. And then you had, and I mean, I own, like, the amazing Criterion Collection Blu-ray set that they did for Godzilla. That's spectacular. Anyway, that's right in my wheelhouse. And not that I've loved all of them, right? Hate the Matthew Broderick one. Almost walked out of the Gareth Evans one, right? Mm. But, and I Godzilla King of the Monsters was okay. I think I said it was like a great hour and 40 minute Godzilla movie that was 2.5 hours long. But it was okay. It was better. And I liked Kong Skull Island way more than I thought I would, right? Having said all of that, this trailer got me kind of pumped and excited. Now, I have no idea what anything in and around the battles is going to be. And that's always the key to some of these movies. But
like, does that shit even matter?
Well, it doesn't. Yes and no. Like, in,
you know
in
what I mean?
King of the Monsters.
Like, do you actually give a shit about the human beings in these movies?
In Godzilla King of the Monsters, you don't, only because they really don't give you reason to, because the humans are just there for the sake of advancing story, you know, kind of. They're there because you have to be. But no, I mean, I grew up watching, like I said, those Godzilla movies, like the original Toho Godzilla movies. I mean, I had no idea what the human plots were. None. No, and like none of that mattered to me.
Thousands of you guys are getting stepped on right now.
Yeah, I mean, there were very few of those movies where I actually did get what the plot was for and they usually were not that fascinating. I mean, look, not all of those movies are high art, you know. Yeah. Hint, hint. So, you know, some are, some aren't. And obviously, the original King Kong is a classic, and there is an interesting human storyline there in that movie.
Yeah,
but
well, it's so that's funny because. I have not seen any of the new Godzilla films. Like, I didn't see the Gareth Edwards film, and I didn't see Godzilla King of the Monsters. It's on my queue. Did see Skull Kong, Skull Kong Island, Skull Island. I'm also a big fan of Kong, and I loved the interaction he has with other humans. Mm-hmm. Well, not other, with humans. And the idea that they're using a child to kind of like, you know, manipulate him in a way.
Access him, yeah.
Yeah, it seems really cool and interesting, right? But then at the end of the day, I'm like, I don't give a shit about that little girl. Like, I just want to see these two beasts throw down, because that's all I give a shit about. And I was watching the trailer, and I don't really give a shit about any of this stuff. And I'm like, I think I got to see this movie. Like, I think I need to watch it, because it just looks like Power Rangers or something like that. I don't even know.
I was thinking Power Rangers.
That's exactly what, like, where my brain went. I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is literally like the Zords is coming up and like doing war, you know, and like, who cares about human being and human life? And then I'm like, oh, Millie Bobby Brown is in this, like, whatever.
Well, she was in, so there's a couple of characters that were in Godzilla King of the Monsters. There's so yeah, three, like, of the characters
who cares about this. You like, I'm not here for you.
Okay,
I'm here for these two things, like, going at it.
I love Alexander Skarsgård, so when I saw him appear in the trailer, I was like, ooh, yes, you know.
But, like,
that's
what is the point?
Okay, well, this is where I'm going to be a regular girl. I don't like monster movies. Not really my thing. Like, yeah. I really don't care about these oversized, you know, creatures, Kaiju. Monsters. Like, yeah, like, I would say in that type of genre, I would say the monsters, creature stuff is, like, kind of my least favorite. However, in this trailer, the beatdowns that they were showing between, like, Kong and Godzilla, I was like, oh, that looks interesting.
Like, Kong just right hooks this lizard. Did, like, see
and it didn't land like in a, like, a wacky monster movie, like, oh, like, cartoony way. Like, it's like he lands like a punch would land.
It looks like motion capture. Yeah. Like, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's good. A legit right hook that he just.
And there was no overreaction either. Like, it's not like Godzilla flew like 100 yards back, you would see, like, in these, just like, oh, all right. Yeah. And, but look, so there is a story arc that they're weaving, more so, with Kong Skull Island and Godzilla King of the Monsters. I mean, they hinted at it. Well, not hinted there. It's in the Gareth Edwards Godzilla 2, but it really gets expanded on afterward, where there's this Monarch Corporation, and there's like these are ancient creatures, right, that have a history. They refer to them as Titans, and there were ancient wars that they fought and things like that. And so they're kind of unraveling that story, and that's really the kind of the meat of the where the human stuff comes into play. And apparently that's getting expanded on a bit in this as well, because they're, like I said, they brought back three of the characters from Godzilla King of the Monsters for this, and that was one of their primary roles. And, you know, so, and there's references to like some ancient war, like where these two have fought before, you know, back then. Sure. And we've seen, because at the end, you know, spoiler alert, at the end of Godzilla King of the Monsters, you see all of the other Titans bowing to Godzilla, right? After he defeats King Ghidorah, and you see them start to head towards Skull Island. So, like, there's history there. So, like, there is a kind of a fun monster universe thing that they've created. It's not as gripping or riveting, obviously, as, you know, what you would get, like, with an MCU or a DCEU or any of things like that. But it's still fun in its own way.
So with that, is that – so do the other monsters – because it looked like other monsters showed up at – Skull Island, and like Kong just dismantles.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know things. Again, without, because it's a trailer, so you don't know the content. Right. I mean, is that supposed to be the monsters that were heading there at the end of Godzilla King of the Monsters, yeah, or was that a flashback to this ancient battle we heard about that was fought and so on? Because I mean, you know, and I think this is like 50 years or something after Kong Skull Island.
Yeah, because that was in the 70s.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it feels like it was in the 70s, if I remember.
That's how they explain why Kong in this movie is the same size as Godzilla, when in Skull Island he would be about 200 feet shorter. Right. And they said he was basically like a youngling at that point, and he was, yeah, there's still 50 years of growth in him and whatever.
He's a freaking beast.
Yeah.
He's like Dwayne Johnson. Getting ready for Black Adam
or Young Rock.
Seriously,
gorilla power.
Yeah,
beast mode.
Beast. He is a beast.
Yeah,
yeah.
Nah, it looked crazy. I mean,
yeah, and I mean,
I'll watch it.
The funny thing is, I'm actually, this is one of these movies. So this is exactly the kind of movie. And I know people are going to say, "Oh, you need to watch it on a big screen because it's modern." Nah, no, this is exactly the kind of movie that I am excited that I do not have to wait. Because it's not a movie that I probably would have gone to a theater to see. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't have. I guess it depends if it's hard to remember what normal times were like when there were multiple movies to go see and to choose from. But like, this is one of those where it's like tailor made for me to be able to sit on my couch and watch it. So I'm pumped about that. And another movie that I'm going to be able to watch on my couch, because that was the intention, is Zack Snyder's Justice League. Now, the only thing is, I'm going to have to get up and walk a lot, because now this thing has gone back to being one movie. So it originally was going to be a miniseries, right? It was going to be like 4 episodes or whatever, or 4 hours broken up into X amount of episodes. Now it's back to being 1 4-hour movie, which explains why about a month or two ago we were hearing rumblings that like, oh, we should try to get this released theatrically, like in a limited theatrical run. And I was like, well, how's that going to happen? It's a miniseries now, but no. Apparently it's back to being a movie. And, you know, 4 hours is, that's just too long. I mean, I don't know if it's exactly 4 hours or whatever, but like there is not a movie. I don't care what the genre is. I don't care what the type, that I am going to want to sit on my couch or anywhere for that matter in one sitting and sit there for almost 4 hours or 4 hours and watch it and enjoy it. Now, the fact that I'm going to be able to watch it at home means I can probably, I don't have to watch it in one sitting, but like, I don't really know if I want to watch a movie in multiple sittings like that. Like, it's not kind of how I want to digest.
I couldn't make it through The Irishman.
I wouldn't even bother. You know,
The Irishman was the last movie. Yep, we had to pause that too.
That was like
right?
3 hours.
That was like 3.5 or something like that.
That shit was long as a mother.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a different thing, but like, I'm wondering why. Like, what's the upside to making this a 4-hour movie as opposed to, unless, you know, if you're telling the same story, right? And it's really just a matter of like editing. I mean, maybe they didn't want to go through the hassle of editing this to make it cohesive episode, because it is different storytelling, right? When you're, I mean, making a miniseries is not taking a movie and breaking it up into multiple parts, and here's your edit. Like, you have to construct episodes, right, that have a cohesive story within them. And maybe that became too difficult, so it was wound up being a better narrative just all crammed together as one long movie, which would make sense because it is a movie.
You can't just say, like, all right, the first hour, we're just going to cut it there and show the first hour and the second hour and the third hour and the fourth hour, because the first hour can cut in the middle of a scene.
Sure.
So I'm asking the same question, like, why turn it back into a movie format that's four hours long? The episodes or the mini series of 1 hour each sounded so good, and it sounded digestible, and perhaps it fell apart in the editing room, Chris. I just didn't see
how he was gonna cut it into four individual sections, because each of those need to have a rise and fall,
right?
You can't just, and you can't cliffhang it, because that's just weird. Like, I expected it to be, you know, a movie, not 4 hours. I mean, the last movie that I watched besides The Irishman was like the extended version of the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Same here.
Mm-hmm. And like all of the stuff that was in there was like filler stuff. Like, I got why they cut it, because you just add a little bit more context, a little more color here. Nothing, you know, nothing earth shattering, right? Maybe the battle scene was like 5 minutes longer, 2 minutes longer, which is substantial. But for this, it just feels gratuitous. So it makes me feel like all of the reshoots that happened were to help shape the film narrative, right? Because I feel like we're going to get to a point where it's going to be like, first half of the movie is doom and gloom and like, oh, we're going to bring back all these characters and everyone's fighting Superman. Like, it's going to be the Joker's fighting Superman, Deathstroke's fighting Superman, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, and then the Flash goes back into time and then they reverse stuff. I feel like this is how it's going to all work out. And then the back end of it is like a time jump. And we're, you know, we're kind of back on track to the normal Justice League.
We knew that, or we assumed that they were going to have to do something to shift the narrative, because the where Zack Snyder was going with this originally was building to something else that we may or may not, and probably are not going to get, right? Like, this was going to build to a bigger story, and that's not going to happen. So we knew that he was going to have to figure out, like, how is this going to end? Because you can't end it on a cliffhanger. You can't end it like leading to something that we're not going to see. So that part I figured, but I just think that once you decide that this is going to be a movie, and it always was a movie. So like I said, so it should have always been looked at as a movie. Like, that's where maybe you start tightening it up. And you can't tell me that, unless you're going to tell me that these reshoots that he's done and this extra stuff and all this stuff is going to complete one big story. Like, I think that there was probably room to cut this a bit.
It's gonna be all filler. Like, it's gonna be like, oh, here's Victor Stone's full story. Here's Barry Allen's full story, and you're gonna be like,
I don't
give a shit about you, Ezra Miller. Oh,
it's just tough. I mean, even the Lord of the Rings extended editions, I mean, I watch them, but I don't watch them like often, and I enjoy them, but like you said, there is a lot of filler in there, right? And the other thing is, I had seen the theatrical versions already.
Yeah, same.
It's also not Lord of the Rings that we never saw.
It's not an epic,
like,
right?
And it's like another different cut
that's what I mean.
People are asking for. It's just, I'm kind of like, I'm like scratching my eyeball because I'm just kind of so over this. Like, the whole movement, great. People got what they wanted, but now you're turning it into a much bigger thing than it actually was supposed to be.
It is the movie that for 4 years is like not stopped being talked about.
Right?
Like
for more than 4 years.
It started as a movie. It started as like, okay, I'm going to do my cut, right? And then it's like, now we got to reshoot. And then now we're going to be 4 hour different episodes, and now we're going back. It's like, just figure it out. There, I think he's being too precious about it.
Yeah. That's possible.
That nothing is, because there's a lot of pressure, right? So I think he's being too precious about the whole project, and that's why it's like the back and forth. Because, you know, when you're developing a project with Marvel, Phase 4, there's an end game, right? You kind of like can track it. You know where you want the story to go. For something like the Snyder Cut, it's open and ended. Like, it just starts there. People just want to see your version, and it's not going to go anywhere. You're not building anything. You're not adding to anything else. Like Chris said, you're not going to end it on a cliffhanger, because there is no second project.
Yeah. We'll see what it winds up being. Warner Media is throwing money like they got it.
Yeah.
I think it's probably going to suck. So.
Here's the thing. All of this pomp and circumstance, and it could be a dumpster fire too. You know what I mean? Like that. Yeah. That to me, like, can you imagine what's going to happen when the reviewers get their hands on this cut? Like, are they going to be like, "Oh my god, this is the best thing ever! I'm so glad that Zack Snyder finished it," or are they going to be like, "Yo, this movie was trash"?
Well,
that could be another reason why it's so long, because he might be trying to appease like all his fans, like the entire fan base, so not wanting to cut anything out, like showing like elongated storylines. You know, he might not want to cut it to even 3 hours, because they don't want those reviews saying like, his cut was just similar, you know?
Well, I also think it too, it's because there is a lot of story to tell, right? And this movie was going to lead to a bigger universe and other solo films. And so, like Aaron said before, like I have a feeling that it's just maybe the fact that he realizes that this is going to be, in some cases, the last of these versions of these characters, or his vision for these characters that you're going to see. I mean, it's not going to be the last time we see Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman. It's probably not going to be the last time we even see, and at least in some way, shape, or form, Ben Affleck's Batman, right? Mm. We're going to see more Aquaman, but we've already, like, the versions of Wonder Woman and the versions of Aquaman that we've gotten post Justice League are not really his visions for those characters.
No. Mm-hmm.
They're different. They're lighter. They're more colorful. They're different feel, different tone. So this is his last shot to kind of complete his story. And if he wants this to be able to fit to where you're going to be able to watch Man of Steel, BVS, and then this movie together, then he is going to have to flesh some stuff out. He was either going to have to cut out a lot of stuff, which he's obviously not going to do, because then you're back to the same issue that you had with the theatrical cut, kind of. Or he had to go big and expand. Right. It's just, for me as a viewer, like, this becomes a little bit more difficult for me, because I am excited for this. I do want to see it. I am interested in it from a lot of different perspectives, but I don't really want to sit for, 4 hours, that's a long time to sit. And now, again, I could get up and do other things, but is that how I want to experience a movie? Like, because at that point, then you could have stuck with the miniseries format and let me digest it slowly.
Right.
Because now I'm going to be forced to almost do that on my own. I'm going to be like, all right, I'm 2 hours in. All right, that's good. I got to do something else now, and I'll get back to this later. And I don't know that that's how I really want to experience a movie.
4 hours is, that is so long.
Yeah.
That is so, so long.
And that's really long.
Of dense, too, because, like, look, I binged season 3 of Cobra Kai, right, in one sitting, and that was 10 episodes, like a half hour each. So that was, like 5 hours of my life that I kind of, but in between episodes, I could get up, I could go around. I wasn't literally just sitting staring at my television for 5 hours watching all of those episodes. I was in, but you pause after the episode, do things, get this, that, and this. So in the course of a day, I watched the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do that with a movie.
Yeah, you'll be doing it during the Victor Stone highlights and the
highlights. Cobra Kai also, like, all the episodes end so nicely and on a cliffhanger, almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's, like, easy. It tells you what to do.
Right.
You know, you don't have to say like, it's 2 hours. They're still in the middle of this fight scene. I'm going to stop it right here.
With me, it's more about its time as it relates to the narrative. Like, I could spend 5 hours in a day watching television. I just, like, I don't want to have to spend 4 hours of my day focused on one thing that's one big story, like, around where I have to take it in as a movie, because it's not designed to be watched, at least we don't think, in stages, right? It's designed to be watched as a film now. So it's different, different animal. But I know you did, Vanana, watch, finally finish Cobra Kai. So why don't you give some thoughts on that before we get out of here?
I did. You know, I have to say I enjoyed the first and second season better than I did the last season. I think they really punched, no pun intended, they really punched up the fighting. And it was, it almost took away from the storyline for me, you know, like, just all that, all those excessive big fight scenes. It wasn't a big deal, but I did find myself liking season one and season two. I watched those a lot quicker than this last season, but I love the way it ended. And I said that from the very beginning. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, but probably by now everyone's seen it except for me. I said from the beginning of the season, they got to come together.
Yeah.
They got to come together. I love the flashback scenes where we get a little bit of John Kreese's character and where he comes from. And that's one thing I like about this show is the villains, so-called villains, or the bad guys, or the guys that, you know, aren't so good, they also come from somewhere and they show it. And it's not so black and white, which is what I love about this show, is like you can kind of relate to everyone, you know. I can't stand Tori, right? Because she's just so rough around the edges and she's so mean, but you can see where she's coming from. So I love that the show balances out those type of things. Whereas in the original movies, you know, it's the 80s. There's a clear, I'm the good guy here and this is the bad guy, you know, I'm on the good side. You're on the bad side. Right. And we're going to fight. And now in this modern world, it's a little bit more ambiguous, which I think lends to really good storytelling, even though the show is a little bit like cheesy at times, you know, especially with like the lovey dovey, like teenage stuff or the parent stuff. But I like that aspect of it.
There you go. So.
Kind of my take on that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned the Kreese thing, because I think we didn't talk a little bit about that at all. I like his backstory. It's I thought it was an interesting wrinkle to add to that character that we've only seen as a one-dimensional like bad guy, right? But he's got, you know, he's got things that have happened to him in his life, and that's kind of shaped who he is.
Sure.
And
it's going to lead to season four, where the belief is that it's going to lead to the return of his name, Thomas Ian Nicholas, the guy that was in what was that guy's name from Karate Kid 3?
The guy with the ponytail.
He was like he almost became an action star for like a minute and a half. Yeah. That he's going to be, you know, that's going to tie into that, and that that's what he was calling at the end.
With this season, I don't know. I think my mind wasn't suspended in, you know, that disbelief, but like I had a problem with like the adults when what's his name got his arm broken?
When Dimitri
got his arm broken, right? I was like, now you gotta like sue, like in the real world, right? You would like sue, call the cops. Like I felt like the adults in this situation were not being adults.
Dimitri
at
doesn't
all.
Have parents. He's too he's too nerdy. His parents left him out of the street.
Yeah. You know. So there were little things like that I felt like in this season were like a little bit far fetched. But you know,
I mean, the fact that they broke that kid's arm like made my stomach churn.
I
got to a point where I was like, wow, they went full ham on breaking this dude's arm, like legit. And then he's walking around and they draw a big cock on his arm, like thought that was hilarious.
I know.
You know, but I did like, you know, what the thing that pissed me off? I was like, let these little kids bust up my $1 million home.
Oh my God, I know.
I was like, I would be like, no more Miyagi-Do. Like, I'm going full on, no mercy. I'm killing all of these kids that were broken.
I would press charges on every single one of them.
I'd be pressing bullets into a clip. Are you kidding me?
That's what I meant. Like the way they're using, I get it. They're using karate to solve, you know, their real problems, but they're almost like, okay, the real world doesn't exist and we can only use karate to solve our problems. Like real adults, you know, kids, I understand, but like you can kind of bend, you know, your suspension of disbelief.
It's very 80s. It is so very 80s. It's funny because, you know, we talked a little bit, I don't know, did we, about No Retreat, No Surrender. And so I started rewatching that again. love this movie. Like, such a guilty pleasure. But the father in the have you ever seen that movie?
No.
Chris, you're familiar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Banana, see the movie.
Okay.
Or don't.
The father at the very beginning of this film, he's like a karate instructor. And he's being pressured by a mob boss to like join this organization. We don't know what this thing's for. I still don't know what's going on. And a guy attacks him, and the first thing he says is, karate is not meant to be used aggressively. That's what he says, right? Like, I'm only supposed to be defending myself. And then he ends up, like kicking this guy's ass until Jean-Claude Van Damme pops up and, like, puts a serious hurting on him. But, like, it's so funny, like, and I know that that is the fundamentals of karate, right? It's self-defense, mm-hmm. never really for aggression, whatever. So I just – that's – And then the guy gets his ass kicked by Van Damme, and then he's like, the only answer is we have to leave the city. So they leave Los Angeles and move to, like, Seattle.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
There we go.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Total sense.
By the way, the guy with the ponytail, Karate Kid 3, just for the record, is Thomas Ian Griffith. Thomas Ian Nicholas is the guy from American Pie and Rookie of the Year. That wouldn't be nearly as interesting if he popped up in season 4. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, they're both about as relevant as I am at this point anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But so that's so we'll see.
One more season and then
They need to wrap it up.
And then they gotta wrap it up. Yeah.
Elizabeth Shue pop up.
It always is great to see her pop up.
And I'll be honest, I'm like, and that's why you've had a longer career, because you're our better actress. Like, she's so good. She's so good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Ralph Macchio is so bad. So bad. Like,
he's not that bad.
I'm sorry. What's his name? William Zabka? Is it Zabka?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's better. He's better than Ralph Macchio.
I mean, look, Ralph Macchio has not actually done a lot of acting when you think about it.
He hasn't aged.
Right. You could count like on one hand the things that Ralph Macchio has done, basically.
He's okay. He's not like the most, like, he's not like the best actor, but I find him, he's so natural though. You know, like
he has this
good hearted nature to him that comes across.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I just love the dickness that comes off of William Zabka's character. I just love it. I love it.
Yeah.
He's such a dick.
I like the fact that, you know, we're seeing a lot of parents now, or like even schools, kind of like coddling kids, right?
Yeah.
Like everyone gets a trophy and all that kind of stuff. And I like that we do see that side, but we also see the old school side of teaching kids, which I guess I'm a little on that old school side, is like, get tough, get back up. You know what I mean? Don't be a pansy. Like, let's go get it. You know, pick yourself back up. Yeah. You know, when he's getting like that physical therapy with like that frou-frou guy, you know, like all about spirituality. And he's like, no, like, here, try and grab this magazine. Like, this is how you do it. I liked all that stuff.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Just covered in cheese.
But
yep.
If your kid gets a participation trophy, I ain't mad.
Yeah. All right. I guess that's it, right, for the week?
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Yeah, so I'll wrap it up. And on the note, just to point out, behind me, you'll notice my tribute to Babylon 5, one of my favorite television shows of all time. Mira Furlan, who was Delenn in that show, passed away this week. She was 65. Aww. She also was on Lost, which was almost one of my favorite shows of all time until it wasn't. She was Russo on that show as well. Kind of a legendary character in sci-fi. And so that's my tribute. If you have never watched Babylon 5, I don't know what the hell you're waiting for. Find it. It's amazing television. It's not like super available. It might be on Amazon Prime now or whatever, but you should check that out. So on that note, check out thefanboygarage.com. You can check out our episodes, our merch store, and also join the conversation on the social media, the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram, at the Fanboy Garage. And of course, for those of you who are watching us, let all your friends know that they should subscribe to our YouTube channel, the Fanboy Garage Podcast. They should like these episodes, even fire up the notifications so you know exactly when our new episodes drop and all that fun stuff. And for those of you listening on the audio version, check out the video version as well. What are you waiting for? You get to see Aaron and his baldness and everything else.
Chrome domes like Humpty Dumpty without arms and legs.
Stop.
You could find me on Twitter at RealCAlmighty, by the way.
You guys can find me at @banana_TFG.
And before I drop, I just want to give a quick shout out to Special Effects Comics and Collectibles. My boy Phil, longtime listener, so I have to show support for him. He offers up, it's an awesome auction on Facebook where they auction comics, collectibles. He also can do consignments. So if you have a collection that you want to sell, you can work with him and get that going. But special shout out to him. And in the meantime, and you can find him on Facebook, on Instagram, and I think, yeah, and on Twitter. Mm-hmm. But enough of that. You can find me on Twitter at @AAronSpeaks. That is @A_A_RonSpeaks. Thank you so much for listening to episode 129 of the Fanboy Garage. We will catch you guys next week. Be safe. Later.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.